Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk!
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do!
I'm the Joker, baby!
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Bars, episode 100 of season 2 of LCB. Jeff D'Lo, Ken Jack, Gooch, and Chris Castellani coming at you at the beginning of the week, post-CinemaCon, which is apparently like a huge thing now. You guys talked about it on the last episode of the show. I don't know what happened, but CinemaCon's always been a thing, but now it's like... That was like the biggest movie event in the last year, including the Oscars.
Yeah.
It's like strange. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of cool stuff.
Cinema Connor.
There we go. I was thinking like it was Cinema Con, like Captain Cons, but he's just like wearing a director's vest or something like that.
That's
Cinema Cons.
Such a niche reference.
Cinema Con. That's a movie theater in Northern Georgia.
I'm not even going to bother like explaining that reference for non-Barstool fans. Just no reason for the effort.
So, could be a succession thing, too. I could see that if he took over ATN's entertainment division.
Calispa, someone's got to take it over now.
Yeah. Don't tell Jeff.
Fucking robots still sleeping in the cave.
I can't even talk. I haven't even seen Succession yet. What a fucking shame. But we will splice in Succession talk in here. If my HBO Max ever lets me actually watch something, I guess I could torrent it. I could illegally download it. But somebody has given out their HBO Max password a few too many times, apparently. Mm. Not fun. Anyway, CinemaCon, we'll be talking about that. A couple of trailers. I got to be honest, too. I think we have three trailers today. It's pound for pound, three of the worst trailers we've ever talked about on this show.
Wow.
I liked one of them.
I liked one of them. Hmm. Okay. Two horrible trailers. One that I'm not going to judge. There's one trailer we're going to talk about. I was actually shocked when I watched it.
I hope it's the one I liked.
Really? Okay, we'll see.
I hope it's the one I like.
We'll see. Then we also have an interview with Maria Bakalova, who rose to fame through Borat. She is in the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie, which is getting interesting reviews. We'll talk about that. The reviews are very odd for Guardians 3. I thought they were all incredibly positive and overwhelmingly good, and then I went and looked, and the Rotten Tomatoes score is rather low from what we initially saw. I was kind of surprised by that.
One common complaint between all of them, which we'll talk about later, but yeah, one big complaint so far.
Though people were a little more, not to this level, people were more down on the second Guardians, and I loved that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that
I wasn't crazy about it.
I really liked the music in that, and Ego, fucking, what's his name, was so good. Kurt Russell, he was amazing in that role.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was as good as the first, but I always thought that people were a little unfair on Guardians 2. And then we also are going to be reviewing Peter Pan and Wendy from Disney Plus. Which is
a movie.
It's not good.
Thank God.
Took me four tries to watch.
The main part of the review for that is going to be, we're going to be comparing it to the other live action movies, which, I mean, it's such an odd movie because it's on Disney Plus. It's like a B-team live action Disney Plus movie, even though it has like a pretty... pretty big director in terms of like the artsy things and like picking somebody who you would expect to have like a really creative, different vision. So we'll get into that. Obviously the big one this year is going to be Little Mermaid, which is already under insane scrutiny. And it should all 100% be around Flounder looks.
What happened? Why is it under scrutiny?
No, I'm not talking. I'm not even talking about the casting.
Yeah, they just don't like the live action Flounder. That's it. There's a lot of internet hate groups that are very upset about it.
Mad that they've cast.
It's because of Jacob Tremblay. That boy must be stopped.
Jake.
But the live.
How pissed do you think Jacob Tremblay is that like Timothée Chalamet took all the reptile man French last name vibes away from him? That should have been his. Like that was his market to corner.
Jacob should have changed his. He'd be a lot more interesting if he was a Jacob with a K. That Eastern European like spelling. Yeah.
Fast and Furious Jacob. Yeah.
Jacob.
But yes, outside of people disliking Little Mermaid for the unnecessary reasons of like race, the fact that it's just lifeless and colorless in terms of the characters and everything.
People are racist towards mermaids.
We will talk about that as well with Peter Pan.
If mermaids were real, people would be very racist against them. They'd be like, keep those fucking fish underwater, brother. I'm watching them. I'm doing border patrol at the ocean lot, at the seabed. Like it would happen in real life.
we will talk about compare Peter Pan and Wendy and all the other live action movies, which also in the release of this, people reminded me of a pretty horrible scene from a live action movie that I defend. I like Jungle Book quite a bit. Like I think Jungle Book is probably the best of the batch, but I forgot that there's some boring ass scenes in that movie too.
I need to revisit it. Because I remember loving it when it came out, but I think that now we've gotten more of them. It's kind of the sheen of that has worn off. Like it was really cool that they brought that to live action the first time. But now that we've gotten so many of them, it's like, this is kind of just a one trick situation. Like
they're just so, they're so drab and dreary.
Yeah.
Like they're just so bland. The color is so bland in these things.
Bad vibes. No vibe movie.
It's crazy. It's really these movies are so weird. The odd thing is before you could definitely they could get a pass because right like no matter how much you hated Lion King or you liked it or whatever, it made so much money and there was no reason to stop making them. But it's like, what is this one doing? Like what is Peter Pan and Wendy achieving?
I don't know.
No, that's what and we're not
reviewing. Jude Law just wanted to play. Jude Law just wanted to play dress up.
Yeah, it's a movie that has the rare distinction of appealing to absolutely nobody. I don't know who this was made for. It's not whimsical or fun enough for kids. It's not dark enough to appeal to adults, and it's not weird enough to garner some cult following. Like at least the live action remakes that we've gotten so far, you know, whatever you want to call it, Lion King, you know, they came from like a place of popularity. Like obviously those stories appeal to people. I am baffled this was greenlit. We aren't even reviewing it yet.
We'll roast it soon.
Yeah. So strange. But let's start out with CinemaCon. As we mentioned, you guys covered a lot of stuff on the last episode of this show. There's a few key pieces, new trailer for The Flash released along with initial reactions for the movie. It's another one. The reactions are interesting because they started off very, very positive. And I think they did remain fairly positive. But there's a couple cracks here and there where you can kind of see like, all right, maybe it's not the greatest thing ever. Also, David Zaslav, the guy who runs Warner,
Bozo.
He's such a fucking bozo. He's such a bozo, man. Like the way he talks about these projects, but
like Kendall Roy, he sounds like somebody from Succession.
It's just one of those things where you would think he would go up there, and like I get this would be a lie to a sense. You think he would go up there and give everything the same enthusiasm, and he just like didn't. Like some things, the way they talk about The Flash,
this movie needs to be the greatest piece of cinema to ever hit the big screen. Like the way they've hyped this up, but the reactions are fairly positive for the most part. I've seen some drastic ones like that. This slots in with Superman and Batman 89. Like that's a, those are two of the greatest things ever made in terms of this genre. That's a huge thing to say. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple cracks. I know that you've noticed, Ken, Jack, too, especially. There's a couple common threads. Like, all right, maybe this is not the greatest thing ever.
A lot of it, from what I've seen, there's like the like this is what happens anytime a movie gets reviewed, right? Like, there's the homers. The homers will say it's anything that comes out from a major studio is the greatest thing they've ever seen because they want to keep getting invited. And like, they're essentially PR mouthpieces, right?
Say
for
his
like
name.
Warner Brothers and MCU.
Say his name.
I'm not saying his name, but we all know who we're talking about here. And then there's like a lot of the other people, like the non-homers, I think are, I've noticed a lot of hedging. Like a lot of like people saying, there's like, there's certain words when you review a movie that are like, especially if you're in an early review and like your first social media reactions, when you say them, it's you kind of like, you're hedging so that if the movie isn't well-received, you can say like, oh, I'm on your side. And if it is well-received, you can say, oh, I'm on your side. And those words are like, oh, The Flash, super fun, very entertaining. It's words like that where it's like you could call a movie entertaining and fun and it could still be like not good. You know what I mean? There's a lot of words like that floating around. And then other people just saying like, yeah, this is clearly one of the best movies in the DCEU, which is like saying you're like the valedictorian of summer school, right? It's like this, it means nothing. So like there's, I don't know. I think from what I've seen so far, it's clearly not going to be the world ending best superhero movie of the last few years. Like I feel like it was hyped up to be, but also still probably good and entertaining and at the top tier of DCEU, which is something that they've needed, especially after Suicide Squad was just like in like three tiers above everything else they've ever made. So I think another movie there, and it's a nice little way to wrap up their dog shit experimental universe and like move on into the James Gunn universe is going to be that they need this in a bad way.
Yeah. I still believe they made a serious mistake. Like Jeff said, declaring this as the next great comic book film epic. Cause I think if they would have gone the route, you know, I'm sure that the film I'm talking about here is a much better movie. Had they have gone the Top Gun Maverick route where it's like, we keep pushing it back. A lot of delays, a lot of, you know, discussion about what was going on set. But I probably like it's going to drop and you guys are going to see. And I remember like the early reviews for Maverick when people just got super amped and then it had legs to it. I think this would have done better as a surprise. Like, oh my God, despite everything that was, you know, going on, the Flash movie actually turned out to be a big success. But for them to hype it up as this is going to blow your fucking mind, that's a mistake. Nobody wants to hear that shit, even if the movie is great. So I'm more inclined to think I am going to enjoy it in some capacity. I'm very much questioning because I feel like I'm there and I don't know the dollars and cents of it all. I think from their standpoint, this needs to be a $1 billion movie.
I don't think it will be. I think even if it's like really good, there's no way
it definitely needs. It definitely needs to be.
Yeah, and this shit ain't gonna make $1 billion, unless it is, unless it connects with audiences in a way that few movies the last few years have.
What's the highest grossing DCEU movie?
The vibes I've been getting from this review wise is like it sounds like No Way Home, where fans of DC are going to love it for the fan service. But story-wise, it may not be as strong as something like, I don't know, a gold standard like Logan or Dark Knight, kind of, you know, what the top of the heap looks like. outside of that, I'm still pumped for it. I haven't seen anybody say it's bad yet.
No.
So have you guys heard what's going on with this lead actor?
I do like that James Gunn, speaking of hedging, also hedged big time when they asked about him. It's like, yeah, it's up to him if we're going to bring him back. Oh, by the way, take a guess. Highest grossing DCEU movie. Take a stab in the dark.
Suicide Squad.
Wonder Woman.
Nope. It is the highest grossing DCEU movie by about $400 million.
Wait, BVS?
Are you counting Joker here?
No.
Oh, okay, because that might
Is it BVS?
No. BVS is second.
Man of fucking Steel?
Nope.
Justice League?
Nope, not Justice League.
Wow.
Justice League is pretty far down, actually.
Please be Suicide Squad, the first one.
You're missing one where you're going to be like, oh, you got to be shitting me. He is a member of the Justice Squad. Or Justice League, whatever.
Is it Aquaman?
Aquaman $1.15 billion. Isn't it's that Jason, fucking insane?
It's the Jason Momoa effect. It's
the now they have the second one. Oh, speaking of battery actions.
Yeah, I've told you guys Aquaman this for 2. A while. The reactions from Aquaman 2 test screenings up until like this point, people fucking hate this movie. Like, yeah, apparently it's just a pile of shit.
Yeah,
yeah, it's apparently not good. Remember when they were like production, like test screenings, and people like didn't understand it. They were like, we gotta cut that out. Nobody's understanding what we're doing with that. It's like, that's
we need a dumb thing. I want to hear about Aquaman.
A superhero movie. Yeah.
I watch
Aquaman because I remember the final fight in Aquaman. I remember thinking was pretty sick. If I remember right, that was like a massive underwater battle. I thought that was cool. Not the fight between the Patrick Wilson and Jason Momoa. That wasn't that cool. But
he was riding a shark.
What's his name again? Ocean Master.
Yeah. Ocean Master.
I like Patrick Wilson though. He was good in that. Just the CGI shit on his face was no more of that. No more CGI masks.
They teased Kraven the Hunter, which is rated R. Could be cool. Okay. People seem to think it could be cool, could be good. It's different. Aaron Taylor Johnson was Kraven the Hunter. The only thing I'm really going to say about that has nothing to do with DC, but it has to do with a Marvel movie. There truly is nothing worse. As a group that swears a lot, like everybody swears, we say bad words, it's fine and all. There's nothing worse when they tease in a movie that someone's going to say a bad word before the movie comes out. There's nothing less intriguing and more cringe to me than that. And that's what they're doing with Guardians. They're like, yep, Disney approved it. They're going to say fucking Guardians. Like, okay. Yeah.
Batman says fuck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's Batman says fuck all over again from Zack Snyder. It's like, okay.
Like swearing, like corporatized swearing is just not cool. There's nothing, I don't know if they think it's like punk rock or something, but it's just, it's not cool. It's the opposite.
Nothing feels more natural than when you pre-release and hype up a swear word you're going to say. It's like,
that South Park episode when they find out that they're going to say shit on cop drama. Yeah. And so everyone gathers around their TVs and the line is just like, hey, you got a little shit on your face right here.
It's like Kraven the Hunter, and like we're all expecting a curse, and Kraven the Hunter's just like, "Oh, you cunt!" And we're like, "Whoa, holy shit, Kraven, take it down a notch."
I'd love him to be just wildly vulgar. Like, once I get my hands on that spider, actually, what is he? Australian? Kraven's like Australian.
I have no idea. To be frank,
once I get my hands on that little Spider Man, I'm gonna fuck him right in his ass. I just say like the most like unnecessary stuff.
Yeah, he speaks like what's his name? The Santa. In the I Think You Should Leave skit. He's like, oh, fuck, this is the worst fucking day I've ever fucking had.
The last thing that we'll talk about CinemaCon-wise is Dune Part 2. First of all, I did not realize it was being fully filmed in IMAX. Chris is not allowed to talk about this, by the way. We're banning him from talking.
It's going to be the best review ever.
Chris hates Dune. But there's a lot of new... There's a lot of images and shots. You see Austin Butler from behind. You don't see his face. You see Florence Pugh. There was a trailer released, and I assume we're going to get it this week. Usually when Vanity Fair drops, like, the first look, that means trailer imminent usually the next week. That's, like, the most standardized pre-release, pre-hype for any movie. Star Wars kind of... is the one that did that start with The Force Awakens. And now whenever Vanity Fair drops their preview, that's kind of what happens. But the images look cool. It's 100% in IMAX. Like, I don't really need to hear much more than that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think they may have said the trailer's dropping with Guardians. I'm looking that up now.
That would make sense.
One thing we can all agree on is that everyone likes Dune 2, like doing two chicks at the same time. You know what I'm saying?
Hell yeah, bro.
Some that's office space in here. Was it Diedrich Baker or whatever? What fuck was that dude's name, right?
Yeah, Diedrich Baker.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, man. Doing two girls at the same time or whatever it was. That's a great movie.
It is a
great movie. That line single-handedly kind of changed my outlook on life. I was like, yeah, you have money. Like, what else would you do?
what more could you possibly want?
Oh my gosh. Dune is going to be, I mean, the thing being shot in IMAX, how many times are you going to see this in IMAX, Jeff?
I saw the first one 5 times. Jesus. Hopefully that many. I mean, 100% IMAX is like, you just don't, you don't get that. What's the last movie to go 100% IMAX?
We actually, yeah, the never mind.
The space.
The Max, there's a Max joke to be had here with HBO, but I can't think of it.
List of film shot. Well, this is entirely in IMAX. I got to figure that out. I know Nolan's done one or two, right? But not even all of Nolan's have been.
No,
they should have been.
I could be wrong, but when Dark Knight came out, didn't he say something like, we were only able to film 20% of it in IMAX?
That's a movie that doesn't really, I feel like, need it. But something like Dunkirk. Now, Dunkirk and 100% IMAX would have been fucking insane.
I saw Tenet in IMAX. It was very...
Yeah, I mean, it just, it makes a huge difference. And a reminder, before, not even going to see Dune 2, like when you go see the new Mission Impossible, majority shot in IMAX, a lot shot in IMAX, make sure you go see an actual IMAX screen. Most are not real in the country. Most are not real IMAX screens. You're not seeing it in the real format. There's only one in New York City, for example. That one is at Lincoln Square. It's probably the best in the country at a standardized theater, because then there's a lot of other ones that are at like museums that are real. There's one at a fucking furniture store in Boston, I know. I always get told that. It's odd, but it's apparently really good. But most, especially at a theater, are not real. But very excited for Dune, but we'll save some talk until the trailer comes out.
I really hope we get in the first trailer. I hope they show Austin Butler and give us his voice.
Yeah,
I mean, Chris was bored by the first one, and the way they're talking about this one, though, this one sounds like a war epic. It sounds a lot more action based. So I am curious for those, because Chris shares an opinion of some people. They did find the movie boring, but I do know that this was apparently going to be more war and action based. They also teased the return of another character too, which if you've read the books or partially read the books, you do know that character returns, but I won't spoil that if you've not seen the pictures and all that.
Calling him the Muad'Dib.
Me and Gooch are talking about it. We're like, we're curious. The voice of Austin Butler, because he filmed this back to back, I guess, with all this. Like, it has to be a little affected if he couldn't get out of it in press tours like 2 years later, like, after filming.
I feel like Denis Villeneuve would have fired him if he wasn't able to drop the Elvis voice. I feel like he cares so much about Denis, like, you got to fucking stop. Stop sounding like Elvis.
So Denny, I'm a space cowboy.
Let me tell you something, baby. Bubba, Buster. You call him Bubba. He calls fucking Leo Trey Bubba. And that would be
he could do Elvis, and it still wouldn't be as odd of a character as the David Lynch one with Sting. So
it's kind of how the character's supposed to be, kind of a rock star.
Yeah, I
mean, honestly, really the bad guy from Dune kind of looked like Tom Hanks and Elvis. So, like, we could just make this a true crossover event. Like, the Skarsgård character, the big fat face guy floating in the air. He's just like floating up in the air going, he's what? Like, as he goes up. I could see it. Also, what's going to be cool about this, and we talked about this as well, just the fact that, like, part one is such a part one movie, Dune, where it's like it's, I don't think, built to be a standalone in its own sense. Like, it's built to be part of this next movie. So I think that this movie is going to make my enjoyment of part one go up by a lot, because it's going to complete this. Most like we talked about, like Kill Bill in a way, where it's
I don't even know if that's possible for me, but I think those who maybe have reservations, I still think the first is a masterpiece. I think the second, it will be interesting to see like how well it connects and what they do kind of from here on out. I'm excited for the show too.
Yeah, and Zendaya will actually be in this one too, which is cool.
Yeah, which I think she joked about. She's like, I'm not just in dream sequences in this one.
She's on set for one day for Dune 1.
First trailer for Robots starring Shailene Woodley. By the way, this is not a part of CinemaCon. I don't think they would have wasted time on stage with this fucking movie. Hits theaters and VOD on May 19th. Yeah. Charles is a womanizer while Elaine is a gold digger. The duo learn humanity. When forced to team up and pursue robot doubles of themselves, it seems like in this world there are robots that help do certain jobs and tasks, and it's illegal to have a robot double of yourself that can go out and do your work and do everything, and you stay home and relax. They both seem to have that. They then get set up on like a date or whatever, and their robots meet each other, not realizing that they both had robots on the date. They thought it was like one real, one robot, whatever. The robots fall in love and run off. And then they go on some sort of gallivanting, comedic, romantic mission.
That was confusing as fuck. What you just described to me.
Oh, really? Did you watch the trailer?
No, I didn't.
Oh, well then, yeah, that would, yes, you would be confused if you didn't watch the trailer.
Well, I'm watching right now.
It's every moment in this trailer where I'm like, oh, this could be funny. Then immediately was followed by something where I was like, ah, this kind of sucks. Is this the one you like, Gooch?
This is the one I liked.
Really?
I think it looks funny.
Just because it's neon. That's
I'll give you this. Well,
I liked it because it's Shailene Woodley.
I do like Shailene Woodley, who hasn't been in a movie in 8 years. That's not true, but if you told me that, I would believe that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember the last thing she was in, except for the Divergent series.
God.
She was in Big Little Lies. I don't know what movie she was in.
Oh, true. But movie, yeah, I don't know. I'll give you this, Gooch.
I think Aaron Rodgers is
in that.
I think
this looks better than the next trailer we're going to talk about. I'll give you that.
I can't remember the other trailers I sent you, but I did like this one. I like this one. I don't know what it was, but it looks charming. Nice little rom-com. I don't know. I'm a sucker for rom-coms.
Dog shit. What are you talking about, dude?
You look like dog shit. You look like dog shit.
It's 10 in the morning for me. They had years to make this movie. that movie looks so bad.
Yeah. I don't. I've seen that Jack Whitehall guy on the talk show circuit a lot. From what I've seen him on, I think he's actually pretty funny and charming. So he might not be bad. He could make this work, but we'll see.
He was in that Jungle Cruise movie, right?
I thought he was charming in that.
He was Jack Whitehall. Fun fact: he auditioned for Harry Potter.
Really?
To play Harry. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it doesn't.
Didn't get it. Spoiler alert: didn't get the role. Wow. Not be playing. Also, once again, our weekly pre-apology to anyone cast in the Harry Potter series.
Yes.
And the absolute horror that they're going to go through online.
Or Last of Us Season 2, which Mason's talking about now. Preemptive apology for that, for whoever gets the role of Abby specifically. That's going to suck.
I don't know. This does seem like a Gooch movie, though. This is such like a romantic dramedy or romantic comedy
movie,
thing that you love.
If by Gooch movie you mean it looks like a movie that smells like a combination of butt dick pussy like shit mixed together, yeah, that's definitely what it does look like.
I mean, you just named three awesome things.
Yeah, which one's your favorite?
Let the listeners decide.
I feel like we all have our like one type of movie that we are just absolute suckers for. I will always like a movie that has to do with Hollywood, good or bad. I feel like Gooch, you'll always like a. I made a joke about Ken Jack liking any horror movie that involves nuns. By the way, they did release new looks at The Nun too.
Dude, looks great.
Ken Jack walked into the Nun review with us, and he was like, "Man, I scared the shit out of me." We're like, "What the fuck?"
Dude, I was wearing a diaper in that theater, man. I couldn't take it. But that's my daily carry, though. That wasn't just for the movie.
Gooch likes a good 65 out of 100 romantic comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Soccer form.
The next movie we're going to talk about is the one I've been teasing that I think looks terrible. And that is the Hunger Games prequel, Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. What the fuck was this trailer?
It was bad.
What the fuck? Stars Rachel Zegler, who I do enjoy quite a bit. Peter Dinklage, great. Viola Davis. Jason Schwartzman in a role that really bothered me in the trailer. Mm. Like almost SNL skit level, like performance in just the trailer. And then the lead role playing the young Snow is his name Tom Blythe.
Sure.
What is this trailer? This is horrible.
The word on the street for this movie was that it's fucking awful. Wow. Apparently, it's terrible.
Here's the tease, and then I'll let you, you can give your full thoughts. Years before he would become the tyrannical president of Pan Am, 18-year-old Snow is the last hope for his fading lineage, a once proud family that has fallen from grace in a post-war capital. With the 10th annual Hunger Games Fest approaching, the young Snow is alarmed when he is assigned to mentor Lucy Gray Baird, the female tribute from impoverished District 12. But after Lucy Gray commands all of Pan Am's attention by defiantly singing during the reaping ceremony, Snowd thinks he might be able to turn the odds in their favor. Uniting their instincts for showmanship and newfound political savvy, Snow and Lucy Gray's race against time to survive will ultimately reveal who is a songbird and who is a snake. On the surface, sounds I like the concept. I love the Hunger Games movie. Well, I like the second one. I enjoy the first one. I like the second one. I think Mockingjay is kind of messy, but the concept is great. This sounds cool, but the trailer is so fucking bad. Like, Jason Schwartzman playing the ancestor of Caesar Flickerman, which is one of the best roles in all those movies, played by Stanley Tucci.
Yeah.
It just, I don't know what this is.
Yeah. The it's kind of cool to see like a Fortnite origin story, though. That's what it feels like to me now at this point. The and the record of snowman movies, bad, I would say, for the most part. But this is like, it's like you're saying, like the lore of Hunger Games theoretically should be really cool. Like the background of it, even the books, like I like the books when I read them. But this is like, I don't know. This feels like it's going the wrong, such a wrong direction for what this should be going for. Like, I feel like you should be kind of leaning away from more of, and I know that it's like a YA series, but leaning away from the YA part of it, maybe, and like going, not like super dark or gory or anything like that, but just like,
yes,
get it a little bit. That would be cool. Yes. But that would have to be a different franchise. But like,
I mean, it's Battle Royale.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But there's no blood in Battle Royale Fortnite. Well, there isn't, I guess. They don't call it Total Warzone.
The Japanese movie.
Yeah, but that's why that would need to be a different franchise for that. But for this, like, just, I don't know, leaning away from that sort of element of it just kind of looks really bad, man. And I don't know, I wasn't a fan of either of the last two, part one, part two, Mockingjay. I agree with you. I think the second one was solid, and I like the lore set up with the first one. But it's just like, I don't know, man, not particularly interested in seeing any more of this world if it's going to be at the same level of quality as the last two.
That's the point I was going to make is, does anyone care? Like, I feel like even the Hunger Games film series had a pretty short shelf life to it. Like, the second one was the peak. The next two didn't do as well. Like, is even just from a business standpoint, is this going to appeal to people? Like, is there still Hunger Games nostalgia out there? I don't know.
I don't think it has the staying power. It's obviously not like Harry Potter sized YA franchise. I would argue it doesn't even have like Twilight level staying power. I don't see the Hunger Games fandom online. I don't know if they exist. I remember
making fun of PETA and the symbol thing, and that's it. That's all PETA. I remember from it. PETA. That Josh Hutcherson's carved out a nice career, I think, post Hunger Games. Like, him in Future Man is so funny, dude. He crushed that. He's good in small roles.
Yeah, no,
I
don't know what this. I don't know why they made this. I really don't.
Yeah,
it looks terrible. Peter Dinklage needs to find something new. He's such a good actor. Yeah.
He needs to get Serrano. He has a lot of like smaller,
Serrano, whatever.
No, but, no. Exactly. I was about to crap on that movie. No, yeah.
He does. But I mean, like, in terms of like things that he was respected for, his performance. Okay, that's Serrano fair. That's fair. Was, but he needs to find something that he can really latch onto.
He did an apocalypse movie a few years ago that was pretty good. I forget the name of it. But like, he does all these small movies. If he needs to do all those and then get a cash cow from one of these, I have no problem with it. But what I would also, speaking of the cast members, Rachel Zegler, I'd love to see her outside of a big IP now. You know what I mean? I'd love to see her away from like a big, any sort of tentpole action franchise, whatever. Like, I would like to see her in a smaller movie because she is super talented. I feel like wasted on something like
She might be doing some early bag getting here, and then maybe just some small roles.
That,
that'd be
nice. Totally respect
such,
that.
She is such a great singer. She needs to. Mm-hmm. I mean, music. Like, she should be doing musicals. Like,
yeah. Put her in the next Chazelle movie.
Don't pigeonhole her into it. But I mean, when you have a voice like that, you can't help but sing.
Yeah. Well, she's gonna be in live action Ratatouille.
Oh. They're doing that.
Are you serious? Wait, are you serious?
No. I'm sure they will.
They gender swapped the rat. They gender swapped her. They gender swapped Remy.
Yeah, with a name like
Remy. At Disney.
Remy would be a ambiguous. what's the fucking word? God damn it! You cut this out. No, I can't.
That's absolutely going to be a that's absolutely going to be a live action spinoff at some point. It's such an easy make. Just CGI rat. Everything else is human. I mean, that's.
They'll have a fucking cameo from Gordon Ramsay. Everyone will go nuts and then done. I mean, there's $1 million gratitude. So
no. Gordon Ramsay plays the rat.
Ooh, what if Gordon Ramsay's voices? If he's the critic, that would send people nuts. That would make them go crazy.
What's
fucking the bechamel, you fucking cunt.
Yeah, you donkey. Donkey brained.
What would they do? What would be the controversy? They change it from a rat to like a pigeon.
You know, it'd be an androgynous rat.
Yeah.
We don't want to just besmirch rats. We're changing it over to a field mouse. Everyone rioting at Disney.
And then trailer for Black Mirror, season 6. Cast includes Aaron Paul, Zazie Beetz, Ben Barnes, Danny Ramirez, Kate Mara, Michael Cera, and more. I don't really have much of a like any opinion or thought I have on Black Mirror is like dormant. Like I just don't like it's not a part of my brain that is like activated.
Yeah. I think it's something worth, at least with me, it's like, because it's anthology, like I guess you would call that episode. It's like, there's hits, there's definite misses in Black Mirror. That dog shit movie they made, holy hell, dude. That Choose Your Own Adventure? Yeah, Bandersnatch. Come on, dude. Come on. We should talk to Will Poulter about that. We talk to him next week, actually, because I don't think we did the first time. But Bandersnatch was rough. But there's like really good episodes in it. One of our coworkers recently said, and I still can't believe this, he said Black Mirror is the greatest TV series ever made.
What?
One of our coworkers, you will not believe who, Blattman. Blattman, who I would think would have a very pretty decent taste considering how much he works in this field.
What?
He said it's the best TV series he's ever seen. Can you believe that shit? It's fucking crazy. Like,
which again, is gonna. What I was about to say about Black Mirror would not shed a good light on, because I said it's. I think it's for people who think they're smart and are not smart at all. I think that like it's like, oh, whoa, phone's bad, technology not good. See this.
I will say. I saw some replies to, we tweeted the trailer out. People were like, well, season 5 fell off. This show fell off. But you're right, Kendrick. It is an anthology. It's like, it could totally be very different. Good. Like, it's different.
Different directors, different, it's different groups. Like, you know what I mean? And that's why I don't think you could ever call something like this the best TV series ever, because there's so many, it's not like a congruent or whatever series. It's totally different episodes each time.
The best TV series of all time?
Dude, he's a crazy person. I think those tight ass tiny shorts are cutting off circulation of his brain.
for those wondering, Blattman is a behind the scenes. He does
an amazing job. Amazing.
High
job.
Up. Braden with Wood, well, we don't have to gas him up. This isn't a gas him up segment. I like Blattman. We have to pump his resume here,
we don't need to build him up to tear him down. We can just tear him down.
He's a video. He's a five-time Emmy winner. He does run the video department. Yeah. I like Blattman. But I mean, I'm not gonna like him for this next 10 seconds where we say that's the most insane thing I've ever heard about a TV show. That's crazy
person.
I like Blattman, but we're not pumping him up here. That's an insane statement. Hey. I feel like you could give me a list of 100 TV shows, and you could sit here right now and try and convince me each one's the best series of all time, and I could probably convince on anywhere between like 75 to like 80 of them. I'm sure you could, but the second you say Black Mirror, I'm like, move on, next one.
Yep. I'm just fucking crazy, dude.
He was even like, when he was explaining it to us, he's like, oh yeah, and I was. He's like, I normally don't do this, but I was early on it. He's like, BBC. He's like, when it was on BBC, that's when I found it.
He hit us with that. I forgot about that. He's like, I'm a Black Mirror hipster.
And I kind of respect the take. Now I'm kind of into it.
That was funny. But yeah, again,
he turned around. He's like, you know, I'm actually not a film guy, but then they also released this thing called Bandersnatch. Unreal. Bandersnatch was.
You made it sound like he's talking about a new drug. You guys tried this thing. All the cool kids are doing.
Choose Your Own Adventure.
Yeah, Choose Your Own Adventure. That's right. Yeah.
Bandersnatch.
A bit of a whiff. There hasn't been a season though, and obviously COVID's a big reason, but since 2019, which I didn't realize, and maybe that's why, like, maybe that's why it's just so left my brain.
They need needed new tech to come out to say it. Yeah, true.
All the tech they wanted to say was bad. They've ran out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are they going to say? Chat GPT.
Chat GPT. Yeah, it's going to be AI. Yeah.
Guys, this
AI. A guy's going to use like a, what do you call it? One of those AI, like the Trump bot I always use. And they're going to use that to like break up with somebody so that he can date her or something like that. There's your Black Mirror episode.
They need to do a Hinge episode.
Yeah. They did kind of, didn't they?
Should be a conspiracy on why I'm not finding my wife.
I don't know, man. It's really weird. I've been dating my girlfriend for 4 years. I can find her on Hinge. Maybe your app is just broken.
Fuck.
Well, maybe you were. What do you have?
I'm trying to think of what the. Yeah, other than chat.
No more Black Mirror tech jokes.
There's going to be an Eline parody. I can guarantee you that. They're gonna want to do something with him so bad.
Who plays Elon Musk on SNL? Do we know?
I haven't watched SNL at all this season, to be frank.
It's probably zany. It's like it's.
I'm trying to think of his name. He's a white guy. fuck.
Oh yeah.
I'd have to look up the current cast. He's been on it for a while.
I can't even think of like the jokey. That was the worst. I can't even turn into an SNL thing. I mean, this is all on me. That was the worst era of SNL, and like the most recent years is during like the election cycle when they just brought in ex celebrity to play somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh.
He did the Wario. Remember that?
Jim Carrey as Joe Biden's the worst impression ever. it was closer to Joe Pesci. It just yeah.
Who's gonna play this guy? Like, can't wait for this the cold open for this guy to play this person.
If I was a cast member, I'd be legitimately pissed because, like, back in the day, the appeal of it was like the cast. You know, like Dana Carvey. Who is this guy? Wow, he does this amazing George Bush impression, and like you realize who they are. Just bringing in some guy that Lorne Michaels probably had dinner with like a week ago just kind of takes away the appeal to me.
I did always Baldwin laugh at
so bad with that. Oh
yeah,
so overused. The guy they Trump have now is really good.
Yeah.
I always enjoyed that was in the era where Kenan Thompson too was like. My God, I'm not playing one more black woman. Please, for the love of God, hire a black woman to be on this show. It's like you need like I'm not doing it anymore. Like just hire somebody for this show. Long-term cast member.
Yeah,
that's how Bo and Yang feels about playing the glacier that the Titanic hit. Remember when he did that? That was funny.
I want to watch.
I do think SNL is just as funny as it always was. I think people are insane. They say it stinks. It's like SNL's always been the same thing. It's one, maybe two good skits a night, and then the rest is just shit that you fast forward through.
Nah, you don't remember that era.
I remember the era.
I think the difference.
You don't remember. You weren't even alive for that era. What are you talking about?
I was alive for it.
I think the only difference in those two are like there's more. When I think about the moments, like clippable moments, like you're saying, like the one or two good sketches, I could think of a trillion of those for 80s, 90s, 2000s.
Like compiled. But then, like,
yeah, I know. But that's what I'm saying is I can think of all those moments. I couldn't tell you from the last 7-5 years of SNL, the best thing I could think of is the Robo Chomo Rock SNL skit where the Rock makes a child molesting robot. Like again, that's probably the funniest, the only thing I could think of.
Gosling. Example is every time Gosling comes on, it's funny.
There's so many
before that era. That was also before that.
There's so many great old characters that were created by SNL.
Yeah,
and nowadays they're known for impressions, and that's just not what There's still a lot of great old impressions, like there are, but like that's the also. If you told me that Gooch was friends with like 5 or 6 writers on SNL in the city, and that's who he went out with and hung out with, I wouldn't be very surprised.
Hey, if the Please Don't Destroy guys want to hang out with me, they're more than welcome.
Yeah, they are fun.
No, they're fucking hilarious. These are the pure writers for SNL. It's a bunch of like weepy beardo guys, like just hanging out with Gooch. I could see that.
Guys, you know what you should do?
You hear about this Elon Musk fella?
Guys, you hear about this lead actor in The Flash?
But you can do something fun here.
Gooch is just influencing SNL. We have no idea. He's just slipping them notes. Like,
texting
like
ideas.
Just giving them 2-year-old references.
You got a new skit.
He was responsible for getting Tommy on.
Yes,
Tommy that's right. Theory. Hey, you guys hear about this new word called Riz? You think we could do something like this?
That actually is like Tommy got fucked so hard on that because they didn't. They just did what Tommy did. Like
it wasn't a skit.
Not familiar with Tommy. Tommy went on Fox News as the vape god, and it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah,
one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
He's parodying them.
Yes, right. And then SNL just did. Like they went word for word what he did. Like they didn't even like change it up. They pretty much just played the clip.
Yeah, I know. I think they just didn't understand he was joking is the problem. Like that the greatest comedy minds in the world, like you're saying, Gooch, they just flew straight over their head.
Because I remember they said she's like, and next up the vape got a real person I had on my like they like explained the joke. Yeah. It's like it's not.
You guys don't get it.
Like I'm not a comedic genius over here, like at all. But I mean, like I feel like we can.
And Tommy in that clip is about as subtle as like a brick to the face. Like when he was doing that, he's like, I fucking love blowing fat clouds. It's like, if you can't pick up on that, dude, like, I don't know what to tell you.
Honestly, I thought it was funnier when he went to like the vape convention and
that
everyone
was very
there,
funny.
Everyone there
hated
him.
His guts.
I remember one guy was so enraged that he was throwing out statistics to Tom and he goes, look, 99% of smokers will die at some point. Like,
yeah.
Fucking idiot.
Hey, I'll tell you what, 100% of anyone who's ever smoked a cigar or a cigarette, any nicotine product has died. 100%. Right. And that number will never change.
didn't that clip end of the guy just saying to Tommy, get out of my face?
Yeah.
They hated it. It's an all time video that we've released. It's so funny.
That was a while ago.
That'd be like if we went to a Gal Gadot like convention or something like that. That would be us.
Kenjack undercover at a Gal Gadot convention telling everyone she's not a good actor.
So what was your favorite Gal Gadot line in Justice League? And why was it Kal-El? No.
Kal-El, no.
I love how that was in both the Whedon and Snyder versions. Like,
yes.
I thought for sure.
Snyder's like, I can't cut this out. Like, no replace for it.
All right, let's talk about Aura. Have you ever searched your name on a search engine? If not, you might be surprised by the amount of personal information that's available online. Your full legal name, email, home address, phone numbers, and more can be easily found. And it's not just true for you, but also for your friends and family. We're thrilled to partner with Aura. Aura is an all-in-one online safety solution that helps protect you and your family from identity theft, financial fraud, and online threats before they happen. With Aura, you can rest easy knowing that someone is looking out for you. The app scans the dark web and just tries to find your email addresses, passwords, social security numbers, and other sensitive information. If anything is found, you'll receive an alert in real time. If you're a victim of an ID theft, their experienced white glove fraud resolution team will help you navigate credit bureaus and help initiate credit freezes or locks and work with you around the clock to resolve it. They offer a suite of tools to protect you and your loved ones, including the real-time alerts of suspicious credit activity, computer virus protection, parental controls, a VPN, and a password manager. It's a comprehensive online safety solution that provides almost every tool you'll ever need in one place. Aura also helps reduce annoying robocalls, telemarketers, and junk mail by sending takedown requests on your behalf regularly. For a limited time, Aura is offering our listeners a 14-day trial plus a check of your data just to see if your personal information has been leaked online, all for free when you visit aura.com/LCB. That's aura.com/LCB. Certain terms apply, so make sure to check the site for details.
All right, splicing in this succession recap. We didn't have a video option on YouTube. We could have just pretended we did this live. But no, I've caught up. We've all now watched Succession, latest episode of the saga of the Roy family. And we go see the Hollywood studios for Waystar Royko for the first time, which I think is pretty cool because we've been teased the movie side of things quite a bit in this show, but very surface level. Early on in the first season, they talk about how Roman used to work for the studios and because there's a whole small subplot line about how he was really mad. The studio ended up making the movie The World's Biggest Turkey, I think it was called. And he was very embarrassed about that movie being made. He tried to kill it in the studio. They also talked about the Calispatron franchise, which Greg teased in season two. He teased it at the big Logan Roy party that Rhea Jarrell threw. He teased it to his grandfather. He was like, well, you know, they do make the Callispatron series. He goes, it's good entertainment. So now we've seen it again this season. And now they finally go to the studio system, which I'll say off the top, my favorite Easter egg in this entire Hollywood scene is they have their own version of the Minions called the Morons. There's a little billboard for it, and it just says the Morons. I lost Perfect. It. So funny. Good episode. Any manic Kendall Roy episode always has me on the edge of my seat.
Mm-hmm. The I think what was impressive about this episode, and like this was obviously a big time Kendall one. I still think that Kieran Culkin is just the star of this season. Mm-hmm. Like every Roman Roy moment or Roe moment, it just gets like better and better. I think his entire back and forth with Jerry was amazing. Even his back and forth with like the head of the studio or whatever was just hysterical. Mm-hmm. Like, and I like how he was just going straight up like burnt, like bridges, everything. He's like, well, you don't respect me. Fuck you. You're fired. Like, you don't respect me. Fuck you. You're fired. Like, and all these, it just, I love it. I love how he's just like really embracing the role of really what his dad was, right? Like that was Logan. Like if someone disrespected Logan, they'd be dead immediately if they weren't 24/7 kissing his ass. So I kind of like him embracing that side while Kendall is still trying to be like the scion doing his own thing and all that shit. And Roman's like, nah, fuck that. I'll just be dad 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
Roman has a micro penis. that was just hilarious.
Greg, I really get the guy to edit the video. That was also the whole, if you've never watched like an Investor's Day presentation, it is very funny when these companies, Disney does, I mean, everyone does it up front, whatever. We do it. Barstool Sports does it. It's very funny. It's so like, it's corny and over the top because they're just trying to sell to investors, are trying to sell to advertisers and everything. And for him to stand up there and like when he introduced Logan and everyone's like, oh, he's like, isn't that right, Dad? And he walks on the screen. Oh, it's so tough to watch. Also, the biggest winner of the episode was, I think, Carl Kenjack. You teased it. We talked about it when we recorded this podcast earlier. You said like great Carl episode. Carl, Carl kind of stepped up. He's like, yeah, I don't take shit from you. I took shit from your dad, not you, young kid.
Yeah, finally stepped up to the plate.
He knows special. He knows special when he sees it. Him mm-hmm. saying that after the speech. Oh my gosh, so funny.
That was very, very funny.
I mean, you're just waiting. I was waiting the whole time for Kendall just to implode. The fact that he didn't is maybe one of the biggest twists that Succession has ever pulled on us. Because I was waiting for that thing. Like when it ended, it was just fine. I was like, what just happened? Mm-hmm. What just happened? I think everybody else was too.
Yeah, that was, I think, really cool how he kind of just he survived the whole thing. And I also like this entire thing that they were presenting with. I mean, I don't know if I missed it, but this whole Living Plus thing that they got going on, which is it's much like that. But the only thing is, like, I kind of wish they saved that for something like Mattson was presenting or like some more new age tech person, because that seems more them than it would be like, I guess, Waystar Royco. It was that whole concept is hysterical and something I could absolutely see being pitched by like a Silicon Valley company.
That's no Disney does that now.
They do like the resort.
Not like the, they do. No, they do the like home, you, like you communities. Live in. Yeah. The communities. Yeah.
Story,
with the,
yeah, we, the story living. Yeah. What are they? One in Palm Desert.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought the concept of this one was like there's a retirement home though. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, he took it a step further with the health benefits and the
yeah
they're gonna live forever, live more
it
forever.
It very much reminds me of if you watch On Cinema at the Cinema with Tim Heidecker. It reminded me of a very like Tim Heidecker type bit where it's like mm-hmm. promising like the gift of life through a thing that is just not gonna do that whatsoever.
That is it. Tim Heidecker would pitch that like, oh yeah, no, the director is gonna come to your house with a rough cut and you're gonna get to watch mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. I do like there. It's nice to see because you kind of have Kendall, not him and he thinks he's on a really good plane right now with Roman. So it's kind of him trying to be his dad and like trying to be this visionary. And then there's Roman who is power tripping, kind of an identity crisis, but trying to like just grab everything by the balls and just make it his own. And then you got this kind of side thing, like Shiv and Tom. Are they going to be? I think Shiv and Tom are going to rekindle a bit. There's obviously some big news Shiv is hiding, which I'm kind of just waiting for that to drop. And then Shiv and Mattson, like, is that going to be a bit of a trio there? A lot of players next episode. They have a party, and there's a lot. There's what's his face? It looks like Mankin, the Republican candidate for president, is going to be there. Mattson shows up. A bunch of it looks like what's his face? Kendall's ex-wife.
I forget her name.
What's that character's name? That's going to
Shania. I don't remember, something like that.
Oh man, hold on. Damn, fuck, that's going to piss me off. Rava.
That was close.
Yeah, Nate. Who Shiv used to have a thing with, all that. So like pretty cool tease for next week. I just don't know who's going to be the, like, it's tough to tell. Could there be no winners at the end here? Like, things are just kind of still chaotic. I like where we're at. I really do. This show is just awesome.
Mm-hmm. Really good, tease to where we're ending too. You know what I mean? Like, there's just enough time to like really kind of settle shit up. I thought Kendall was about to go in the ocean and drown himself at the end of that episode. I don't know if that was just me. I was getting a vibe. He was just like, yeah, I did one good thing. I'm just going to go die now.
It was the way they shot it with the yeah. music, like kind of growing. And then they shot it from underneath the water with his head, like half submerged. They did that in After Sun too, where I thought he was going to drown the whole time.
Yeah. That was a great time in this episode too. Hurwitz was on one.
There's also, cause like the other thing to note is, They've done a good job with water things, really making you feel like Logan's like gonna, or Kendall's gonna go. Cause obviously he that kid died in the water when he plummeted his car in the water. And then he also, remember he almost drowned in the pool at the end of season mm-hmm. two, or towards the end of season two, or was it three? No, towards the end of season three. Last year he like fell into the pool while he was like drinking a beer. Mm-hmm. So he's always kind of had weird water things that have like kind of teased he may be dead. So I don't know. I can still see Kendall dying out of all of them. He's the one that makes the most sense.
Yeah. Out of all this group in it that's currently living from the siblings anyway. Would make sense.
I was glad they went to Hollywood. I wish they would have done a little more with the studio stuff, but obviously that would have been a bit too distracting at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say it does make you kind of wish we got a little bit more of it sprinkled in throughout the seasons. Like the Hollywood stuff is just very funny. As someone who has to sit and like cover those like investor day shit, mm-hmm. like that was just hilarious. Like it really was. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I think that, I mean, I get the sense that they probably had a lot of that shit lined up for the season. They probably had edited out for time because they did focus on, I feel like, what was the important shit, but like that would have been stuff that I agree. That would have been nice to just hear about.
There's a really funny, I'm a huge fan of any tweet that does like fake Kendall Roy dialogue, like business speak, by the way.
They kill me, dude. There's a really
good
one. I don't
know if I retweeted one earlier. I want to read it if I retweeted it. I'm trying to find it.
I retweeted one very recently.
Fuck, dude, when he did
you might have retweeted the one today.
We need to do what?
Not Kendall, but Roman, when he said, when he's like, we're the new fucking space cowboys. I'm going all fucky wood. Like, that was that was the troll ball. Like, troll ballins wrote that.
Yeah. Like, almost word for word.
fucky wood.
What is he? He says, like, oh, what's the reference in the tweet? Oh, my God. I forget if Gooch, did you retweet it by chance?
No.
I retweeted one very recently that was it was like something about like what are we getting a reach around through the Cape of Good Hope getting fucked in the ass or something like that. Like yeah. It was something like, I remember the Cape of Good Hope was involved. That's the only thing that's I remember from that tweet. But it was
someone said who was this? Who tweeted it? Joe Krajewski. She said, Kendall Roy, we need this. Go fucking Ocarina of Time out there. Jabu Jabu the shit out of his belly. We're Fire Temple. They're Forest Temple. Ganon boss battle, bitch face. It's like, he just doesn't stop. It is great writing because it's funny because like that is exactly what he sounds like. But the writing with Kendall is so spot on because you can make that sound really stupid, but they always find the way to pick the perfect stupid words for him. And it plays off like it's real.
Kendall, what's the play, the vibe, Marco Polo tit fucking us around the Cape of Good Hope. And Roman raises eyebrows. Looks like we're taking a long whiff of taint. It's perfect. Every one of them cracks me up, dude. They're so good.
Yeah, it's like they that's the thing. It's like, it's not like these tweets are making fun of it, obviously, but like they know writing the show that that's what they're doing, and that's why it works so perfectly. It's so stupid. Yeah, mm-hmm. He does do that. He does do like the arms folded, like the fingers in between his armpits. Yeah,
yeah.
What can I do? I got a micro dick. I don't care.
Him,
Jerry. Why don't you suck off my micro penis? How's that sound?
Kendall ball. Getting like the getting the jackets and everything, unreal.
Yeah,
unreal. All right, that's our Succession talk. I guess back to the Neural Pod show continues to rip.
Watch Barry too. Good episode this week.
All right, so that is all of our pre-interview stuff. We have an interview with Maria Bakalova. We have Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. We'll be reviewing it next week. Comes out this weekend. She's in it. She plays Cosmo, the dog, who made a small brief cameo at the end of the first one in the collector's what? His fucking awe? His room? His showroom?
His museum, office. I guess.
His museum? Yeah, what do they call it?
I would say museum, right?
Anyway, at the end scene in the post credit when he's sitting down having a drink and Howard the Duck talks to him. here's our interview.
All right. We are joined now. For the first time by Maria Bakalova. Thank you for joining us. How are you? How's everything going?
Thank you for having me. I'm feeling excited and I can't wait to see the movie because I haven't seen it. I can't wait for you to see it because I suspect that it's going to be amazing. And yeah, that's so far just cutting the hours and the dates.
You have not seen it yet at all. Have you seen any clips, anything?
I've seen a few clips and that's all. And I've seen the trailer and I just have the experience of working with all of these incredible people. So I'm looking forward to watch the whole movie.
When awesome. You obviously we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which we're massive Marvel fans. Our desks lined with Infinity Gauntlets and all that stuff. So we're pretty excited. We have not seen it either. Excited to go opening night next week. Coming out May 5th for those unaware, the third in the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise, the next MCU movie. When you started acting, did you ever think that you'd be going like toe to toe with Bradley Cooper as a raccoon and you as a dog? Did you ever think that was a possibility?
No, absolutely not. I can be completely honest with that. Absolutely not. Even in my for real wildest dreams, because I use this term, I feel pretty much a lot because my life feels unrealistic at sometimes. But this is something beyond this world. This is beyond this universe. It's a different galaxy, I feel like. So no, I've never even in my dreams have imagined something like that. So I feel like I'm dreaming.
So we were super excited for it. Obviously James Gunn has made two of the best movies in the Marvel universe. Guardians is still my favorite in the entirety of the, of all of the MCU. He has like some of the best humor in not only the MCU, but the DCU as well. Do his scripts read to you as like an actress, like just as funny as they do when they appear on screen?
Yeah, I got to read the script while I was on set. And then I returned it immediately because, you know, you cannot hold these things with you. And I was like vacuuming every single page for like seconds. It's written beautifully. It's written to flow somehow and to read it in one breath. So I feel like the script matches the movies that we're watching. And he's exceptional. He's just a genius out here.
How was your mocap experience with Cosmo? Because obviously you're the voice, but I was reading that you got to do a little mocap as her.
Yeah, I really wanted to do it because, you know, when we grow up, it feels like, oh, life becomes so serious and we forget to play like kids. And I felt like a child pretty much in the suit because it's kind of unacceptable to imagine that you can be a dog, you can be a raccoon, you can be a tree. And now when we got to play this, it's imaginable. It's working with your imagination and it's interesting. I felt weird because it's, you know, it's so fit on your body. So you feel like, oh gosh, what am I actually? It's kind of new creature. But it was interesting. And imagining that thing on you turns into an animated character. It's been something out of this world. I'm fascinated by the technology and the setting and everything.
Yeah, covered in tennis balls and everything too.
Yeah, it's because I've seen there's over the years have been behind the scenes of James Gunn's brother Sean. I know he's done a lot of the mocap for Rocket. So did you have to do a lot of like scrouching down and so like hands and knees and
yeah.
like how much you have to get to the floor to really just again be a dog?
Yeah, I did it and I enjoyed it a lot because my education is as a theatrical actress. And it's always some deep drama out there. And now being on the floor and being on my four legs, knees, it's been interesting and it's been fun because you can try to think like an animal in a weird way, positive way. Because puppies, we all love puppies, I hope. And I like the character a lot. So I try to imagine that I have her heart and her way of thinking. And her moves as well. It was weird, but I tried to do it. So I'm looking forward to see how it ended up looking.
You mentioned having to bring the script back and forth. And I've read, especially like when people first found out you were playing the character you mentioned, you're like, yeah, I can say I'm doing mocap, I'm doing the dog, but I can't say much more. How funny is it being in that world of just intense secrecy? That's Marvel. And knowing that you can't. I mean, even right now, like you kind of have to be careful, right? What you say, you can't reveal too much or you're going to get in trouble.
Yeah. Well, it's weird, but I understand it. And maybe working with Sasha and working on Borat helped me a lot. Because usually, you know, when you do something that you care about, you want to share it to the world immediately. And I understand now the reason why we keep it as a secret, because it's way more exciting to see it on a big screen and to see it with way more people, because I feel like that type of movies, that type of humor, that type of heartfelt comedies are contagious as a way of feeling. So it's difficult because you want to share and you want to talk and just shared happiness. I feel it's the best happiness. But at the same time, you understand that your dedication is to your work. So keep it secret and hope that people will have the patience and enjoy it when they watch it.
And jumping into this movie too is also kind of a big deal because, gosh, the first Guardians came out 9 years ago, right? Like this is an incredibly established cast. They were in both Guardians. They were in Avengers: Infinity War, a little bit of Endgame, and you're going in as kind of the newbie. Was that a bit of a daunting thing too? Because it's like, oh man, this is like a family, a 10-year long family in this movie, and now I'm one of the new ones.
Absolutely. Well, every single project that you do, even if for a month, it becomes like a family. But when you work on something like a Marvel franchise that takes a long time of shooting each of these sequences, it's basically a family. They spend their lives together for 10 years and you're a completely new person out there. But I'm glad to say, and I'm completely flattered that I was very well welcomed from all of these people that I admire to the deepest of my heart, because they're exceptional actors and at the same time they're good people. And I just weirdly enough felt home pretty much easily. I was welcomed by the whole cast and the amazing James, and I don't know, it's something that it's very precious in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Was there one character or actor, actress that you worked with the most? I mean, I don't know if you're allowed to tell us that. Was there someone that you played off with the most?
Well, I'm not sure I'm allowed to say it. Yes. Yeah, there is one character. Maybe I'm going to keep it as a secret.
That's fair. Let's see. You're trained well. Yeah.
Yeah. But I got to work with all of them. And I respect and admire all of their work. Mm-hmm. So it's been exciting. And even as a fan, I'm a fan of Marvel Universe. I'm a fan of Guardians of the Galaxy because basically that's the movie, that's the franchise who got me excited about Marvel Universe. Because I could have recognized myself in all of these characters. They're misfits and they save the world. And that's a timeless story that we, I believe, all feel for. So it was the best thing in my life.
Yeah, and they're like a super, super tight family too. I think if you include the whole thing where they rallied around to get James Gunn like rehired on the Guardians 3, like that's an experience you don't get in like any cast really. And like that is like, I can't even imagine the closeness that comes with that too. What was the biggest difference for you though between like this massive studio experience that is Marvel versus the more like guerrilla filmmaking that was Borat 2?
Well, it's a completely different setting. And the people, the creators, the way of thinking, possibly the end result, everything is different from, I suspect, pre-production till post-production till premiere, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We were going back and forth in between different states, countries with Sasha and trying to hide how do we actually film that with not more than like 50 people. And here you have a huge team, all of them dedicated. And they're all working together as a well-oiled machine. And that's all because of James's incredible guidance. It's different. It's definitely different. And you appreciate the fact that it's a longer process, but it's completely, it's completely organized till the smallest detail. And that's why we have Marvel in the world, because I believe that that's the most genius thing that we've ever had. And that's why fans like me, like you, are so excited about the next thing that they're releasing.
It has to be a little less anxiety inducing doing a Marvel movie compared to like the chaos of Borat, I imagine, too. Yeah. Probably a little when the scene's over, you actually get the wrap, maybe relax for a second, as opposed to like running to another location or chaotic environment.
Yeah, well, the anxiety comes from something else, because you're supposed to share that. You're not supposed to talk about it. I remember I was going back and forth between LA and the shooting locations of Guardians. And I was like, oh, I'm going to shoot something. And I haven't shared it with, because I learned that before. I wasn't sharing it with my parents or my friends or anyone. And then when this was announced, I was like, yeah, that's where I was going. And it was amazing. And that's all I can say so far.
That's awesome. Did you have a favorite fictional dog at all growing up? Like, I think we're partial to Scooby-Doo here. I think
Scooby-Doo.
Absolutely Snoopy.
Snoopy. Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah, it's Snoopy down here. I think it's Scooby-Doo or Snoopy. I feel like that's Snoopy. the basic answer, right?
Yeah. Scooby-Doo as well. But no, maybe I was more of a Snoopy person.
No, I respect that. He shot down the Red Baron? What was
it? Yeah, he's also, yeah. I mean, Snoopy's, yeah. Snoopy might be as
a war hero,
as much of a hero as Cosmo. Yeah. Reminder, Guardians out May 5th. We were talking about Borat a little bit, so I kind of want to go back to that. The further you get away from having done the second Borat, is it even crazier in your head just how all of that was for your introduction to Hollywood? Because I feel like probably for as long as you continue doing this, nobody can say they had a crazier intro to Hollywood than you. Like, you probably had as crazy as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, definitely it was something that is not completely traditional, because you imagine yourself, even if you dream about like Hollywood and big, beautiful things, shiny things, celebrations, and all of the glamorous things that Hollywood is supposed to present to you, you never in a million years imagine that, first of all, something like that can happen to an Eastern European, like an open call, basically getting you to the United States of America, and then jumping into this wild ride with the other incredible, absolutely genius man in the world, Sacha Baron Cohen, who is also one of a kind, because he's doing something that nobody else has done before. And probably in the future as well. But it's been dangerous. And yeah, it feels more weird the more time has passed, because I'm like, geez, did we actually did that? Am I that brave now? Maybe not. But it's adrenalizing in a lot of ways. So you just keep doing it. And the satisfaction of achieving something that you wanted to do is incredible. And yeah,
did you ever how much of it did you know going into it? Was it every like How many times, I guess, let me ask you a better way. How many times were you on set or were you in production and he'd be like, hey, we're doing this now? And it was a huge surprise to you and you had to like kind of suck it up and go, all right, I guess here we go. We're doing this now.
Well, with a project like Borat, you basically never know. Even if you try to be prepared completely, even with the amazing people that we work with, sometimes just thing doesn't work and you have to switch it in just a few seconds and you go for it. So there have been lots of times and there have been people that don't really work and you don't have a second take. You cannot go and repeat your ideas, your questions, your lines, because they're going to be suspected that you're not real, which was the whole point of being real and believable. So lots of times we've changed the ideas, and especially when COVID hit, that pretty much changed the whole line of the movie because we were stuck in pandemic for 2 or 3 months. And then after we started going again, things were completely different. And they just elevated the script even more and updated it to be completely temporary and not temporary, contemporary.
How popular was the first Borat movie in Bulgaria? Like, was it something, because for us, like, we grew up with it. Like, we quote it, like, in middle school, like, everyone. Yeah. You were the popular kid if you could quote the most Borat lines. But I have no idea in Europe how its popularity was.
It's been very popular. Apparently, I think I've been 10 years old, so I didn't really know that much about Borat, 9 or 10 years old. But it's been very popular because when the release of the trailer came out, so many people were excited for the movie itself, not just because I'm there. So that made me think that it's been a huge thing. And all my friends and family and people that are a bit older than me have watched it and loved it and see the intelligence in it and this social experiment that basically Borat is doing. So I think it's a universal accepted political satire in a sense that all of us can relate to. Mm-hmm.
Another movie that you were in kind of after this was one of our favorites. Was it last year or 2 years ago?
Well, I think last year, right?
It was last year. Bodies, 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 which we were huge fans of. Again, anything in nowadays, like a horror mystery, kind of that thriller type thing, they're all hitting nowadays. It's become kind of the genre that dominates, especially throughout the year. That had to be a great kind of next project for you, right? The cast was incredible. The script was wild. When, like, what was your first thought? We don't have to say this in case you still haven't seen it. We won't do a full spoiler here. But what was your first thought when you read the script and you saw kind of what the twist was? Because it was such a unique movie in terms of setup and how it ended.
Well, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies came as one of the first things to read when we released Borat, and when I saw A24, I'm a huge fan of A24. What can I say? I mean, I probably am a lucky person, and thank God, or thank the universe, or thank the galaxy, that I got to work with Marvel and A24. They're completely different to each other, but they're both.
A24 just released one of the weirdest movies we've ever seen. We loved it. Bo was afraid.
Everywhere all at once. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Huge congratulations, and I'm a huge fan of that as well. So when I read the script and I saw that it's pretty smart, typically for them, and contemporary again, and feeling fresh and young and like something that we haven't really seen, the way that it's written, the dialogue, the slang, the people there, I was sold immediately. And then I saw that Helena Rain is going to be directing it, and I've seen her previous films, Instinct, in Locarno, one of European festivals. And then having a team of incredibly talented young people like Amanda Stenberg, Mahala Harrell, Rachel Sennett, Chase Sue Wonders, Pete Davidson, Lee Pace. They're just amazing and they're young and it feels fresh. And we felt like one organism in the middle of this crazy horror comedy and had pretty much the best time. We were having a dinner yesterday, Rachel and I, and we were talking about the fact that we truly miss it. It was hard. It was cold. It was difficult physically, but it's not that difficult when you're surrounded by people that love you and you love. And it's just, we're going to get through this together and we're going to make the best of it. So it was, yeah.
What was the funnest part? Because like you mentioned, super talented cast, very funny cast too. Like all the people involved, super, super funny. You're all kind of in this you're in this mansion upstate New York. What was the funniest part of working at that cast? Because I just can't, I feel like with that group of people, I'd be laughing like 24/7.
Well, we were laughing a lot. And at a certain moment, you start laughing at the setting that you're at, because it was in New York, but Westchester, New York, and it was pretty much early fall. So it was cold, like cold, cold. And we're all the time covered in water, soaking water, and covered in blood, mud, and it was freezing cold. We were staying at a weird hotel, all of us, and we were scared that it was haunted. It looked like the place from The Shining. It was weird, but it's interesting at the same time. It's one of these memories that you keep with you till the rest of your life, because it's something that probably will never happen again the way that it happened. And it's, again, precious, for real.
You mentioned a thing that I think that we picked up on too, was you mentioned how the script felt like it was a script that was written for people who are actually young. It didn't have, because there's so many movies nowadays that they have a younger cast, but it sounds like it was written by an older person, right? You mentioned like slang, way people talk. That had to be probably the most refreshing thing, right? Because I'm sure you've seen scripts where you're like, this is intended for someone my age, but this is not written by someone my age. And I can just tell.
Yeah. The script was very smart. Sarah Dunlop has done some exceptional work with the script. And me not even being American, not having English as a first language, but watching tons of American, British movies and TV shows and even reality shows, because as much as I love to watch Dogma 95, sometimes I'm just putting my TV on Love Island. And
right. How can you not? I mean, Love Island is a gem of entertainment as well. It's true.
So you feel like it's for you, and it's kind of like a generation defying horror. Because it's an elevated horror. It's not just bloody, muddy thing happening out there, but it's also about relationships, the way that we see them today, which is a timeless topic, but through the eyes of a Gen Z.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of American, I guess, like entertainment and cold, though, like Love Island, that is UK and Australia as well. Like, I can't claim that as American, even though we have our own now. But you're in a movie coming up that we don't know much about, but you're with an American entertainment icon. It's Unfrosted. It's the movie, which I don't know how much you can say about the Jerry Seinfeld movie. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Well, I can say that movie, I think, is going to be amazing. It's going to be fun, like lots of fun, because they're all the best comedians in the world, all in the same movie, like a huge cast. And he's extraordinary in the way of thinking, in the way of working, in the way of directing and acting at the same time. It's been also a completely different production, because that's the first movie that I actually filmed on a set. So I didn't play a big part there, but the experience of working around these people, it's like a workshop completely, because you're watching and learning and stealing even ideas in the way of their work. So I think it's going to be a great one. I don't know when is it coming out, but it's going to be a fun one. And
it's
a big one.
It's only the second time he's ever movie or TV played himself, except for when he played a bee in the bee movie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty
crazy.
It's a monumental moment in America. Because the bee movie was,
it was like 2007,
yeah, 8. And now, obviously, this is not an animated movie about bees either, so it's a very different
playing a character.
Yeah, he's playing an actual character. Yeah,
it's interesting. I'm looking forward to watching. He's one of the greatest. Yeah.
All right, we want to run something with you. We call it the six pack. It's just the six rapid fire questions. Very first one: what's a role that you auditioned for you really, really wanted but didn't get? You're like young enough in the process where you might not have one. Like, it could be nothing, but
I'm not sure. I don't think I have one that I really, really wanted and I haven't gotten yet.
What was the weirdest part of filming Borat? What was the weirdest experience you had while filming the movie?
Well, leaving the United States and just jumping on a plane and going to Romania after the scene, that scene in the hotel room. That was probably from all the weird things, the weirdest one.
What's a Bulgarian movie that everyone should watch?
Glory by Peter Volchanov and Kristina Grozeva.
What's that movie about? Just curious.
It's a movie based on a real situation that happened in Bulgaria. They're incredible, exceptional filmmakers. They have three things out there, all of them incredibly award-worthy. Glory, The Lesson, and The Father. Glory is about a story of... Yeah, it's about a person who works on the train station and finds a bunch of money and just decided to return it to the government, and then where things started happening. And it's just kind of like a picture of the society and the political system that we're living around with through. So it's interesting portrait of a country.
All right, Glory. What's a director that you would love to work with, or who's a director you would love to work with?
So many. Maybe the reason why I became an actress were Thomas Vinterberg and Lars von Trier. So they remain in my heart forever.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, Vinterberg is incredible. Yeah, both of them. That's pretty solid. Those are pretty. Those two pretty good picks.
What's the most starstruck you've been in your career so far? Like someone you saw that you never thought you would ever meet, maybe?
Well, at the Oscars, I saw Thomas Vinterberg, and I was based pretty much sitting on the same table. I was completely out of my mind. I didn't even thought about the reason that why I'm there, but I was like looking at him and excited about the movie that won Best International Film.
Yeah, another round, right? Yeah. That was my top movie of the, in that movie is the ending of that movie. Oh,
Mads
is like
Mikkelsen is so good in that too. That ending scene with the sort of jazz dance, right?
Oh. And the fact that that's him actually like that he's just like that classically trained to dance. Yeah.
I like to, you're sitting across from Vinterberg, you just slide him the headshot like, oh, yeah, how'd this get here? That's so weird. How'd this happen? So we're interviewing Will Poulter next week, your co-star in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. We want you to give us a question to ask him. We'll say it's from you, but we'll give us a question to ask him.
Can you even say if your character interact with his character? I don't know if that's even like... That may be big, not even allowed.
Inside baseball for like James Gunn, like, hey, how much did craft services stink during this or something like that? It could be anything like that.
How long did it take you to get your makeup and costume ready?
he's very gold in this movie. That is super one gold thing we do know. Yeah. We actually interviewed him 2 years ago for Dope Sick.
Yeah.
And he actually they announced the role of
like the day
Adam Warlock the day after we interviewed him. We asked him, we were like, hey, like, would you ever be in is there a Marvel, a superhero role you would do? And he's like, oh, maybe, I don't know. And then the next day, like, he's playing Adam. We're like, oh, well, could I interview him a day? We have a knack for that. Typically, we interview somebody the day after they get like a big role. So you'll
be something like Star Wars tomorrow.
Yeah, you may get a big offer tomorrow. That's usually the luck for us. So
Okay.
Fingers crossed.
Thank you so much. Incredible. I mean, from Borat to an A24 horror comedy to Marvel, it's a pretty awesome run for you. So good luck with the movie. I think all three of us are excited to see it now.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to see it. We're going to watch it together and hopefully enjoy it and cry. We'll
maybe at the same moon, basically, as we watch together.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Have a beautiful day.
You too.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk about Dave.com. If you're living paycheck to paycheck or struggling to make ends meet, it can be really stressful when unexpected expenses come up. With Dave, you can get your money sooner, so without worrying about how much money you're going to have to get through the week. We've all been there. You have an unexpected medical expense or you get into a fender bender, but you don't have the money to pay for it immediately. Now, Dave can get you out of that pinch when you really need it. Dave is the banking app that can help you get up to $500 instantly with extra cash. And with Dave, there's no interest, no late fees, or credit check. That's more money to fill your tank, finally get your car repaired, catch up on bills without having to wait for your next paycheck. You can finally tackle all those expenses that have been stressing you out, which is great. Millions of people have already downloaded the Dave app to get the financial relief that they need with extra cash. So if you're in a pinch, you need some extra help, download the Dave app and see if it has, think of it as a helping hand from the future you. Download the Dave app from the App Store right now or go to dave.com/LCB. That's dave.com/LCB. Sign up for an extra cash account and get up to $500 instantly. For terms and conditions, go to dave.com/legal. Instant transfer fees apply. Banking services provided by the Evolve Bank and Trust, member of the FDIC.
All right. Thank you to her. Very excited for that movie. We also have a Will Poulter interview at the end of the week. So we'll be talking to Will Poulter, who does play Adam Warlock in the new movie. We have not talked to him in a while. And the last time we talked to him, he got the role the day after we talked to him.
Yep.
It's a huge bummer.
He's going to be casting something big. That's what's going to happen like this week.
Yeah, he's awesome. He was awesome to talk to last time. I'm very excited to talk to him now. It's been a while. I think it was either pre-COVID or right when COVID was like still kind of moving along. When did Dope Sick come out?
Yeah, like 2019.
Two years ago, I would say. Right? No, it had to be 2020, right? 2020 or 2021. 2021, I would imagine, actually. Because the Emmys were from last year. So I would say 2021 if I had to guess.
He just continually gets more handsome. Are you guys prepared for that? He's going to be way more handsome than he was last time.
That's usually not an issue for me and Ken Jack. That's just
we stay the same.
They ask us if we're brothers, and then we make a joke about having beards and being white, and then we move on.
Yeah,
guys,
play the hits.
You guys look like you smell like meat.
I mean, he was 100% right. I forget who was that shit. It was Ice Cube? No. Yeah. Or not Ice Cube. Fucking Ice Cube. I was going to say O'Shea Jackson Jr., but no, that wasn't him.
Fuck. Will Shatner?
No.
He did tell a funny story about shitting his pants. He did tell a good story about shitting himself. That's true.
I forget who it was.
Point. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember who said that.
Look like you smell like me.
We asked him the classic Wes Anderson question, I think. So it was probably a Wes Anderson related actor.
It was a Wes Anderson thing. You're right. It was what does Wes Anderson smell like? And
by the way,
we've not said this yet. Congratulations to The Morning Show getting a season 4 renewal ahead of the release of season 3, which didn't even know they filmed it yet. I don't get it.
You tweeted about it, but this is just another part of the Tim Apple money laundering scheme that's ongoing. It's like we need to filter our money through Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston in order to get it back to old Timmy.
It wrapped in February, filming for season 3.
Got zero takes on that show, which isn't good. It's like neither good nor bad. It can't even – doesn't move the needle one bit.
Highest paid actors in TV history.
It's a lot of money to move, man.
Per episode, Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. The first one was fine. The second one was weird. A spoiler, sorry. A redemptive arc for the Matt Lauer character just doesn't work. And granted, he does die. He drives off a cliff, by the way. He dies.
Why? What did Matt Lauer do?
And it was a show that was heavily impacted by COVID, and they brought COVID into it and made it part of the show. Billy Crudup is very good in the show. Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon are fine. Anyway, I love
the Morning Show, folks. That's what I call any Ari Aster movie. MOUR.
They probably shouldn't. God damn it. Can't do it.
No, say it. Say it. You guys say
it. Don't say it.
No.
Say it and you can cut it out. You can cut it out. You can cut it out.
No.
I was gonna say, did you guys see Severance is like just not like season 2 is just
We should talk about that too. That's not good. Sucks.
That's terrible. That like that sounds like it's not going well.
What was it? I just read it was like cast problems or something, like they were having disagreements.
The showrunners apparently just do not see eye to eye one bit.
Yeah, creative differences there.
And the every episode apparently has a ballooning budget, which I don't understand how you can have a ballooning budget on that show.
In an office.
It's in an office.
It's like the easiest set to ever produce.
That not getting a second season would be horrible.
Great show. It's probably one of the best. It's such a cliffhanger show.
Someone did ask me, though, and I can't remember who, someone on Twitter, and they're like, wouldn't it be just a hell of a story, though? Like an all-time, like, you guys remember Severance? Like, just one of the greatest, like, opening seasons for a TV show ever, and then nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, just ends there.
And the reboot ends in 10 years, like party down.
Ends on a cliffhanger, like you wouldn't believe, too.
He's never... It'd be kind of a fun journey to take your friends on, like a roommate or somebody. It's like, watch this show. And they're like, okay, next season. Never happened. What?
Be like the end of Alf.
Yeah. Alf?
What happened at the end of Alf?
Doesn't he get kidnapped and taken onto a spaceship, but then the show didn't get brought back for another season? So.
Huh. I fucking love Alf. Know. He likes I never, no.
The most Alf thing I can say is that I had a friend in my neighborhood growing up, and he was homeschooled. He was Canadian. That was his favorite show.
All I know is that Alf meant alien life form.
Do you know, right, do you know what Alf wanted to eat? What Alf was setting Ken Jack up for something?
he hated Tuesdays.
Cats.
Yeah. You want to eat cats? Hey, bro, yeah. You hear that?
I do remember that. He had his phone, too. Little Alf phone.
Alf.
You hear that shit, bro?
Oh, fuck. Anyone remember Greg the Bunny with Seth Green?
No.
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 What was that?
Another show. Another puppet and human show, Cousin Skeeter.
That I do remember.
Yeah. Classic.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Peter Pan and Wendy. It's Peter Pan. No synopsis needed. they've. This is now – how many of these have they – also, we –
it's best to be like 11.
There was a tweet. Variety might have posted it. I saw it quoted by Marcus from Cosmonaut Picture Show on YouTube. He tweeted, he said it was about Christopher Robin, how they're now pitching an idea of a series, an R-rated Christopher Robin series. Like he's going through like a midlife crisis. We got to stop doing that. We got to stop taking public domain properties and being like, how do we make this all twisted?
Yeah. And you never want to say hard R. That's usually a bad thing. When you're describing anything, you usually definitely don't want to do that, especially with a Disney or children's property. That's bad.
I'm so sick of those. Now, this is not that. I will note this is a reimagining to an extent in terms of like artistic creation, how it plays out, but it's still pretty much beat for beat. It's Peter Pan. How many of these have they made? I can't find a list.
Making another one. They're doing another thing.
Did Blood and Honey come out? I don't even remember it.
Yeah, it did.
It's one day. It's a fucking stupid, stupid movie.
It's got a 3% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It stinks.
See, Disney live action remake. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
So Peter Pan came out in 1924.
17.
It's like a fucking silent movie. That was the first one. In terms of live action. Then another live action came out in 1991, years later. So the second one technically would be Hook by Steven Spielberg. Obviously people know that. Then there was another one with Jeremy Sumpter.
Oh, yeah.
Peter Pan came out in 2003. That seems like that came out like 2006, 2007. Then there was Neverland in 2003. It's another unauthorized reinterpretation of the show. So that's four. Pan in 2015, so we waited a long time for another one.
That's what we're
about to do to this. Hugh Jackman, Amanda Seyfried in that, Rooney Mara. Then Wendy came out in 2020. That was a complete reimagining. It was from Wendy's perspective, totally different type of thing. That was not unauthorized. There's another movie.
wasn't there one with an 80s pop star?
There's another one, Come Away. Then there's this one. And then there is,
oh my God.
The guy who made Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, they are doing, a reimagining of Peter Pan called Peter Pan's Neverland Nightmare, which I haven't seen it. I'm sure it's a complete pile of dog shit. Like his Winnie the Pooh movie. The Winnie the Pooh movie is fucking terrible. And there's obviously the original from 1953, the animated one that, everyone knows. This movie is, it's also directed by David Lowry, who
it's bizarre.
Yes.
Yes and no though, because he, remember he did Pete's Dragon.
It's true.
Anyway, he's done some really like cool, small movies. Old Man and the Gun with Robert Redford. He did The Green Knight in 2020, which is like one of the most A24 movies ever released. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Very
he's like, you ever see that meme where it's like the all pink house next to the all black house? That's like his entire filmography. It's like the Oppenheimer Barbie back to back.
And then A Ghost Story, which is another just like just dripping with A24. And then he did Pete's Dragon in this movie, which this movie just, I can see where he's trying to make it his own, but it still sticks pretty much to the confines of Peter Pan. It's just lifeless to me. Like this movie's just blah. Like I just don't, there's nothing about this that really hums. There's nothing about this that gives you like wonder. I don't love the original Peter Pan. Like I'm not obsessed with the original Peter Pan movie, but like it is still a classic, and it's a movie again about wonder and being a kid and remaining being a kid. It's one of our lower Disney cartoon ratings that you and I have, Ken Jack, in terms of original. You give it a 75, I gave it an 81. But there's a look to it. There's a pop. There's a feel. There's a color. Just like these other live action movies, that is just not present in this. It's just not there. And I'm sick of these. Like I'm just sick and tired of these remakes. There's a couple that are okay, a couple that are fun. Jungle Book. I think we all. I won't speak for everyone. I know I enjoy the portrayal of the genie by Will Smith more than I think some people do. I think he did a fun job for like what he had to do. Tall task. Ken Jack, I know you love Beauty and the Beast. I enjoy Beauty and the Beast, but for the most part, these are. I mean, I talked about the beginning. We have this Little Mermaid movie coming out that is, again, aside from like the ridiculous, stupid reasons why people don't want to see it, like it is just a drab, dreary,
it looks awful,
like lifeless movie. And this one, I wouldn't say is fully lifeless, but it's just like, it's like okay, like all right, that's over with. Like it's got no heart and soul. So not a fan. I think it's better than Lady and the Tramp live action, but bad. I'll give it a 56 out of 100. It's fine. Like it's absolutely below average. Like whatever. Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think you mentioned an important preface that applies to me too. It's just like, I'm not a big Peter Pan guy. I was never a Peter Pan guy growing up. Never really got into it. We did have a local diner called the Peter Pan Diner. Great mozzarella sticks. That's the only thing I have to say about Peter Pan growing up.
Why the fuck would you name your diner the Peter Pan? What is the story there?
I don't know. And if I remember correctly, there was a car wash attached to it. It was a very weird place. But anyway, I do want to start with some of the positives because there is some good things in this movie. I think the soundtrack from Daniel Hart was really good. It was like, this is to bear with me here. John Williams light levels of like adding effect or another levels to certain scenes, like which if they had a different soundtrack or a different thing would play way worse. I think the pirate actors were funny. They reminded me of like that really doofus crew from like the Black Pearl in the first Pirates movie. Like the she shanties were cool. Jude Law, I think, was a good hook for whatever that's worth. I almost wanted more of him and less of everything else. Main two kid actors were solid. We always talk about how they can derail a movie. And I just like that there's a lot of on location shots too. They built a real pirate ship too for the actual thing, like 130,000 ton ship. It's crazy. But that stuff's all great. The negatives, nighttime sequences in this movie, almost unwatchable. Like you physically like unwatchably bad. Every scene away from the pirates kind of stunk. The CGI wasn't as bad as some of the other Disney stuff from recent, but it also wasn't great. I think every one of these movies, right, should have like three main objectives, right? And this is what we're talking about, how we're sick of these. I think it should be loyal to the spirit of the animated original. It should be entertaining for the primary audience, which is almost entirely children. And you have the last thing, which is what most of these miss, is like infusing it with something special, like a personality and a heart. And I think it hit those first two notes. It definitely didn't get the last. And these movies, like, it sucks to say, but like, they do need to justify their existence as anything other than cash grabs for the mouse. Because, you know, like, we all know that's what it is at the end of the day. That's the only reason they greenlight them. But like, I want to be like fucking Cypher in the Matrix. Like, I want the wool pulled over my eyes. I want to be like tricked. And that's why I feel like it's like you're going to see a magic act that you've already seen, except now you're getting charged more. It's being performed by a lesser artist that also explains the trick while he's doing it. And, you know, like, all I want is magic. Like, I want to feel tricked. I want to be entertained, and I want to be fooled into thinking that this is something that has heart and way more creative inspirations for it even existing. You know what I mean? Because, again, we know it's cash grab. We know this. But I want to be tricked into thinking that it has heart and personality and good intentions in being made in the first place. And I don't think Peter Pan does that, or this movie does that. There's a lot of individually solid things, but it's just kind of this colorless, lifeless sort of remake that just the only big corrections they did was make it less racist, which is like, if that's the only thing you can change about a live action remake, fine. But like, I feel like you should aim to do more.
Was the original racist?
Apparently, oh, yeah. Very racist, yeah. Towards Native Americans.
See, I don't remember it at all.
I don't remember the movie really at all, to be frank. But I think it's one of those things where, like, I would really rather David Lowry, who, like, I'm sure that he did a commendable job with working with what he got. I would rather he be spending his time doing something else, because I think he's a phenomenal director who we've obviously talked to before. I landed on like a 60 for this. So again, below average. I'm sure with kids. This would be an entertaining enough watch, though. So that's where I land. I'm very happy this is not a theater release, too. This is perfect for Disney+.
Oh, my God, yes. Just piggybacking off that last point, I agree with you. I think David Lowry is very talented. And The Green Knight was not a movie that I loved, but I thought it was one of the most well-directed movies of that year. I thought he did a really incredible job. He's an imaginative guy. And the few parts of this movie that I liked, there were some unique shots. You know, when you could see what was going on. I'm not going to deny the effort that was put in. That's a point you bring up that was interesting, Ken Jack, about the sets and a lot of practical stuff. I wish they would have gone more in that route, because I think you're being too kind with the CG. I think it's fucking awful. And there's so many moments, you know, where they're trying to be whimsical. You know, the characters are flying for the first time and it looks so fucking bad. I can't really think of anything else about this that impressed me. They do keep it short. It feels long, but they did keep it short. I'll give them that. I disagree with you about the kid actors. I thought the guy who played Peter Pan was fucking awful. I thought he was so lifeless and completely flat. And look, I don't like this movie at all. I'll admit it's an uphill battle, because I've never liked Peter Pan. Peter Pan was always a fucking weirdo to me. I was always creeped out by that arc, by his weird costume. I hated that stupid Peter Pan Lost Boys song that was on the radio like 4 or 5 years ago. It's never been a fan. So I didn't expect a whole lot out of this. But as a whole, just empty, soulless, lifeless, everything that we've come to expect out of these Disney live action remakes. A buddy of mine was texting me the other day, and I think he made a good point, which is it shouldn't be that hard to do these in live action and make them not just financially successful, but critically successful. For whatever reason, they have not cracked the code on how to do this right. I have no issue with a live action Aladdin or Peter Pan or any one of these characters, but all of these movies have even at their best, are inferior to the films that came before them. And at their worst, like this or Mulan, have been awful. And so, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, a 33 out of 100 for me. I could not. I just think it's a movie that was made to appeal to no one and will be forgotten very, very quickly.
Mm.
Yeah. 40 out of 100 for me. Yeah. Movie stunk. It stunk. It was boring. I mean, I agree with Chris. I think Peter Pan was terrible. I hate shitting on kid actors, but he just didn't have like the charisma or the juice that you'd expect out of like Peter Pan. I respect David Lowery. I think at points he was trying to take swings with this and make it different in his own. But like you guys said, at the end of the day, it's 90% of this movie is just as lifeless as anything else that came before it. I mean, I don't understand why they need show tunes is what they need. They need the music. They need original music.
That's what I liked about the shanties. Is I think those are like some of the best parts of the movie. Anytime the crew starts singing.
Yeah. I think Jude Law did a decent job as Hook. Jim Gaffigan was there.
Yeah, he was actually – I actually thought Jim Gaffigan was pretty good at this.
Jim Gaffigan was there.
Yeah. Captain Hook.
Hot Pockets.
this movie, fuck it. Who's signing up? Like you said, they couldn't have released this in theaters. It wouldn't have made $100 million, which is like the floor for any Disney release. I don't imagine it garnered any subscribers to Disney Plus. Who the fuck is signing up for Disney Plus to watch this? I don't even think people know this movie came out.
No.
Very minimal advertising for sure.
Yeah.
Like it's, I don't know. I don't know why David Lowery did this. I don't know why Disney did this.
Apparently very personal for him. Like he really liked Peter Pan growing up and inspired him or something like that.
You don't get it. The movie is about never growing up. You guys are just indignant. You guys are being indignant.
So Ken, Jack, and I, our worst Disney live action remakes, and then I'll let Chris and Gooch give theirs.
Alice Through the Looking Glass, although that's not really a remake. Pinocchio.
Pinocchio. Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I thought.
Dumbo. Dumbo's got to be there.
Dumbo's down there.
Oh, no, Dumbo. It's Dumbo. Because I don't count Alice Through the Looking Glass because that's the sequel. So I'm talking about like the original based, like the adaptation. Dumbo was terrible.
Dumbo stunk, dude. And it's weird because these are like acclaimed directors at the helm of most of these. Like that was Tim Burton on Dumbo. Who did Pinocchio was Zemeckis, right? Like these are certainly not like spotless record directors or anything like that. But like these are like acclaimed enough directors where they should be much better than they are. Like, oh, it's really crazy.
I think with a lot of this shit, just the same with Marvel, which we talked about. I don't think the directors have a ton of control here at all. I think these are just paychecks.
There's some where they do well, but like, and this isn't this also isn't really a remake. It's just a tattoo. Like Cruella, I thought was really cool.
I think Cruella is the best out of. I don't know if you'd consider it a live action remake, but I think in terms of the live action from animated, I think Cruella stands head and shoulders above the rest.
Yeah.
That also is in a different world where like they didn't need to stay loyal to any existing shit. Like they wouldn't need to stay loyal to the fucking 101 Dalmatians with Glenn Close or whatever. Like they were able to, they were free to go and like do their own thing. But I think as long as we're talking about like the ones where they actually remade something we've all seen, Beauty and the Beast and Jungle Book are definitely up there. And I think Beauty and the Beast is aided by the fact that like you didn't really need to like have like for example like an animated fish talking or like any like you didn't need to add anything super amorphous because it's already there. Like that's what it was like in the animated version, so I think that helped a lot. And the songs in Beauty and the Beast rock, and that helped a ton. I think
I don't know how you fix these is the problem, and I don't think that you can.
I think it's I don't know, like me and Ken Jack are obviously the big animation fans here. I think for kids stuff, animation is so important.
I become an anime fan too because of this pop, because of Tro and Ken Jack. And, and I think it was very evident off the top when I started to watch more and more is that there are the conversion from animation to live action is just so difficult because you lose, without even trying, you lose so much of like the wonder and you lose like – things just don't translate. And some of these I think could, I guess, work. But the one thing's evident. The more animals, the worse it is. The animals thing just doesn't work because they refuse to give the animals in these movies any like expression. Right.
There's the Uncanny Valley thing. I thought Mulan was like the worst of these, though.
They should do with the animals. Do Homeward Bound style.
Fucking amateur hour.
See, Mulan I didn't sing
pretty bad.
Wasn't very good.
I didn't like it.
It was the very songs, man. For me.
Yeah, I have no idea why they decided not to make that a musical.
Yeah, it was like just below average for me. What did I give it? Yeah, 69. There you go. You know what was kind of fun? And it was a nice attempt was Cruella. It was like a little.
I actually enjoyed that. I enjoyed it, I think, because I think Craig Gillespie is a good director and the cast was really committed. It gets ridiculous in the third act, but
they didn't have source material they needed to stay loyal to. That was the biggest thing, I think, and they were able to go creative.
Great music in that movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great music. Gillespie's so good with music. He's like James Gunn level good at like just picking the right tracks for his movie.
Like the 70s, 80s like punk rock scene. Like that was awesome. Yeah, and Emma Stone, like you said, Emma Stone was fully committed. She gave a great performance as Cruella.
Mm-hmm. Our boy Paul Walter Hauser, always great.
Beast in that movie.
Yeah, this thing stinks.
And we got more coming. We got fucking Moana. We got Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah. The Lilo and Stitch one is, I guarantee you, that the CD
that's
going to
be disgusting.
Yes.
That's going to be bad.
I mean, that alien is not going to play at all in live action. It's going to be very weird.
They're going to make him like navy blue, like the darkest, like low brightness fucking hue that you've ever seen in your life.
That's the thing that kills me. It's like everything is, and like ironically, like some of the movie was like literally overcast in the scenes, but like everything looks so just, it's just the life is sucked out of it.
And I
think it wasn't as lifeless as others.
Yeah.
Like I do think there was some here that was like, all right, like you can see like his vision there, but like it does, the physical look of the movie looks like they're always sucking all the color, all the fun out of it.
It looks like the last few Harry Potter movies, like I liked, but they were so sepia toned that it almost took, kind of, no pun intended, the magic out of it. You know, what's one Disney story that it was adapted into an animated movie, but I think could definitely work if you give it some balls in live action? Hunchback of Notre Dame.
They just did that with Quasi. Broken Lizard Boys just did that on Hulu. By the way, that movie stinks real bad.
Oh, was that an actual thing?
It just came out like last week. They called it Quasi. It's a Broken Lizard Boys. One of them plays like a Quasimodo, and he has sex with the hot girl, like you might imagine. Broken Lizard, but real bad movie, real stinky.
He doesn't get cucked.
Source material is really dark.
Yeah, that could work too. You know what? I just figured it out. Bradley Cooper as the Hunchback of Notre Dame, except no prosthetics, just like with Elephant Man. He just sits there going like this. Like, I'm the Elephant Man, even though I'm a very handsome traditional actor. Bradley Cooper.
I can't think of a single one. I don't need prosthetics.
I'm just going to lightly lift my left shoulder.
My back up.
Esmeralda, what are you doing? Right in front of me?
Yeah. People forget
I'll sit in this chair in the corner and watch. How about that?
People forget that was the main lesson of Quasimodo, was that he's so ugly, but you shouldn't make fun of him. But he's also not good enough at heart to actually get the girl in the movie. Like, he's ugly. He's too ugly to get the girl. Like, that was the main lesson of old Quasimodo. Well, they had a cool villain, though. What was the villain's name in that? Claude something? Or shit.
Fuck. He's like one of the best. Hellfire is like one of the best Disney songs too.
Yeah, that dude is a counter. Yeah, he was. That's basically was
Frollo, it. Frollo, right?
Frollo. Oh, yeah, not as cool a name as I remembered, but he was a cool dude or good villain. But.
I'm just staring at our list of these movies on our website, and I just can't like. Like, there's times where I think that there's good ones, and then I look at this list, I'm like, no, there really weren't. Like, the best thing you can say about these is if they do a good job, it'll hit you with nostalgia. Lion King's a great example. I loved Lion King when I first saw it. I walked out of it. I'm like, I think I just had nostalgia for Lion King.
I did, too.
Yeah.
I don't think I loved it, but I liked it way more than I should have.
Yeah, and then it kind of sits with you. I remember Kendrick and I walked out, so I was like, I think I loved it. He's like, really? I was like, yeah, I think I love that movie. And the more we thought about it, I'm like, I don't think I love that movie. I think I just want, like, I just, it was cool to hear the Lion King songs on the big screen. Like that's what it boiled down to. And then when it sits with you, you're like, not very good.
Yeah. So it's like watching I don't know, a very expensive cover band of a band you like, where you're like, yeah, it was cool hearing the Sublime song or whatever. It's like, oh, it's a Roman.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know why that, if you're a Sublime super fan and you love Roman, I don't know how that really works, but I just remember they replaced him. Yeah, just felt weird.
Yeah, no, I think Little Mermaid is doomed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks bad. Like the literal look of the movie is just enough alone to sink it.
Yeah.
Jesus. Just anyway.
With all these movies, again, we've been hammering this home to maybe beating a dead horse at this point, but like just oversaturate, if anything, with these movies. Don't fucking drain the color out of all of them. You're trying to entertain fucking children. Brighten it up. Give it plenty of color. Like, imagine this movie, but everyone was like, not to use this over this part of the two cliche of an example, but like Ragnarok level brightness of colors and everything like that. Like
Avatar.
That's great. Yeah. Yes. Hooks. I don't understand. Ragnarok. Yeah, sure. It's oversaturated, but it's fucking based on a goddamn comic book that's colorful. Like you can be colorful in these movies. They are family friendly for kids. Like have fun with it. Just
I want Hook's go overboard jacket to pop. I want it to be like the brightest crimson I've ever seen. I don't want it to be drab. Like that's like I think the go-to word for every single one of these goddamn Disney live action remakes is just drab. Add some color, bro. Jesus.
Yeah, again, like Avatar, Way of Water.
Yes, great example.
Look how awesome Avatar looks, right?
Or Alita. Like,
I just started rewatching Alita last night.
It'd be one thing if this was like a mainstream blockbuster thing where like mainstream blockbusters all do this. So if you want your movie to be good, no, the biggest movies in the world have cut. Like Marvel has that issue too with some of their stuff. Like it's just washed out. It's tough, but these don't really like they're fucking cartoons. Make them look like the cartoons they're based on.
Or just why don't they reanimate these things? Update the animation, if anything, just, put it out with a new style of anime. Like, I don't know. Like
We'll do like Earwig and the Witch level like CGI animation. Don't give them the idea. They'll make it.
No, what I'm thinking is like give it a creative animation revamp. Like Spider-Verse. Like that's a very fun kinetic style of animation. That's not the only one, but I mean what Star Wars Visions is doing.
Yes.
Like
I don't know how cool, but I don't hate that idea. I don't hate that.
Again,
that's more interesting than doing this.
Far away from CGI animation. As long as I like that for sure.
Remember to not watch Earwig and the Witch.
Bad movie. Fucking most disappointing son of all time, Goro Miyazaki, son of a bitch. Fucking loser.
Earwig and the Witch. Oh, that movie stunk. Anyway, Guardians 3 next week. Very excited. The people who I trust with Marvel movies, who I usually have my opinions aligned, they seem to like it. They seem to like the movie. So,
Rotten Tomatoes around what, like 85 right now?
No, it's like 76.
Damn. I think critics.
That's than the first two. Yeah,
I just don't think Marvel movies are going to get that pass that they used to get.
Yeah, I'm with you.
That's fair.
Yeah,
I like Black Widow, but when Black Widow came out, it had like a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I could also see, because Marvel movies are starting to get more shit lately, I could see that trend where critics now start to maybe dislike them.
It goes the
overcorrect, and they're wrong. I could see that happening. That's a very like critic-y trend thing that I could see happening.
That's what happened to Gotti.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Fucking critics.
Yep, Gotti. Yeah.
Eve Montourage. We did him dirty. Remember they had a Pitbull song playing while John Gotti was cooking burgers or whatever on his street corner?
Dolly!
That was Eve from Entourage watching too many Baz Luhrmann movies, I think. And he's like, yeah, this shit works.
Fucking guess what, pizza pal? Boy.
Sure doesn't.
That's it. We will have Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 next week, along with a interview with Will Poulter, who plays character in the movie. Make sure to check out our next episode later on Friday. That's it. Ken, Jack, Chris, Gooch, I'm Jeff DeLay. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks. We'll be right back.
Stell Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stell Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stell Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee can lattes now available at StellaBlueCoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.